and welcome to another edition of our Memory Lane podcast here on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. And very pleased to be joined today by a man who has just an outstanding story in sports. Terry Hanratty, a local guy from near Pittsburgh, a star at Notre Dame, won a national title, won a couple of Super Bowls with the Steelers. Talk about a very, very memorable sports career. Terry, how are you today? Thank you for joining me.
Very good, Corey. It's always fun to talk to people from Pennsylvania.
Oh, you know what? I tried to look up if you won a state high school championship, Terry, because you won one in college, you won one in the NFL. Did you win anything at Butler to complete the trifecta?
Well, my senior year, we only had a 9-game schedule. We were 8-1. And back then, they had that Gardner system. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Because if you had one defeat, you could not get in the playoffs.
Mm.
And we had, I think, one of the greatest high school football teams ever. I mean, just think on that one team that we had three guys that played at least 8 years in the pros.
So you feel like you would have won a state title if you had had a chance?
If we had a chance, yeah, there's no doubt. So, you know, we screwed up against Aliquippa, and I actually, you know, did not have I had a horrible game. But given a second shot, I think we could have easily won a state championship.
We've got a lot of great memories to talk about with Terry. But I like to start the podcast with give people an idea of what you're doing now. What are you up to these days? You still involved in sports at all?
Not at all, no. I'm my son played at Notre Dame, so I spent a lot of time out there the last, you know, he graduated about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I was out there quite a bit the last, you know, 8 years. So, but I spent about 35 years on Wall Street, and I was retired a couple years ago. And you know, I caught COVID. I was in the hospital. I had double COVID or double pneumonia with COVID, and you know, I was in the hospital 5 days. So it was a little goofy then. But I expected to start working on my golf handicap. But then I got a person got in touch with me and introduced me to this product that I've been traveling around, and it's a UV lighting product that kills all pathogens.
Oh.
So we've been going around different hospitals throughout the more northeast right now from Pittsburgh on to here.
Now, what is that product called?
It's a UV lamp, and it's a 22 nanometer lamp that kills all pathogens. It's unlike any, you know, UV lamps have been around for 100 years. But if you have most people have UV lamps now, and they put the lamp in a room, and it'll kill the pathogens in the room. But as soon as someone walks into the room, you have to turn it off because that UV lamp will burn your skin.
Mm-hmm.
This lamp does not burn your skin. You know, a fellow contacted me, and I was, you know, like I said, I was getting ready to work on my golf handicap, and I said, you know, this is really interesting. It could, you know, we've been contacting a lot of hospitals, a lot of nursing homes, and a lot of schools. And you know, those are the three biggest users, you know, where most people really need them. So obviously, hospitals have, I mean, and this is not a COVID place. It kills all pathogens. We have, you know, the company's been around for about 15 years. I just got involved with it a couple years ago, and I've sort of been using the people that I know and traveling around and just, you know, talking to different people and then we can get some traction. So the company's called Sterile Ray. It's out of New Hampshire, and they're good people, very bright people, and, you know, we have a lot to back it up. So that's what I've been doing the last couple of years. So it's been fun.
Terry,
it keeps me out of trouble.
We have a lot of sports stuff to talk about, but that's very fascinating to me. I chatted with John Kolb a few months ago, and I brought up the line of Chuck Knoll, go on with your life's work. We tend to think of athletes, professional athletes, about their sports careers, but 35 years on Wall Street, now you're doing something in the medical field. I find that part fascinating because people might know your sports story, and that's why I like to start this podcast with what you're doing now, because when athletes finish up with sports, you still have a whole life to live, and it sounds to me like you've been able to get as much nice experiences in your post-athletic career as well.
Well, you know, the average life of back then when I was playing, the average life was around 4 years, lifespan in the NFL. And back then, you didn't make the kind of money that the kids make today. That, you know, they're making now generational money, where they will not have to work a day in their life, and their kids won't have to work a day in their life. Back then, you know, when your season was over, you pretty much went to a job that you were hopefully doing in the future. You know, so it's a different game. It's a different, you know, phase of life. But you had to prepare for the long off season after you finish football.
All right. So we've got a lot of different things we can talk about: the Steelers' career, the Notre Dame career. Just so much success that you were able to have. I want to start with your college experience, leading Notre Dame to a national championship in 1966. You finished third in the Heisman voting in 1968. You had a tremendous college career at Notre Dame. What is your favorite memory of your college career, Terry?
Well, probably the best one, the best decision I ever made in my life was I was 17 years old, which was, you know, highly crazy at the time when you think about it. A 17-year-old kid can make a big decision. But I was all ready to go to Michigan State until I met Eric Porsigian. We came to Pittsburgh, and I drove down from Butler to meet him at the old Hilton Hotel there in Pittsburgh. And we had lunch, and I came back to my mother, and I said, "Mom, I'm going to Notre Dame." He says, "Well, I thought you were going to commit to Michigan State." And I said, "No. I said, I just met the man that I want to spend the next 4 years of my life with." And Era was a great disciplinarian, which, you know, most of us needed back then. And he's a great football mind. We were never out-coached on the field. We were never surprised at what our opponent gave us. Sometimes we didn't perform as well as we should, but Era was always had us prepared well. And he was just a great human being. And I always say, when you start thinking about coaches, and you always get the guy who never really played, who badmouths the coach. But Era, from the consensus All-American down to the guy who never got on the field, everybody loved and respected Era. And that's what really made everything so easy for me at Notre Dame.
Now, had you had a good relationship up to that point with Duffy Daugherty with Michigan State? He was a Pennsylvania guy. Had you dealt much with him? And what was the final factor from going from Michigan State to Notre Dame?
It was all Era, but Duffy was just a wonderful, wonderful person. He really was. And to this day, I hope Michigan State wins every game except for Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. And that's because Duffy left that such a mark on me. But I'll never forget. Again, you got to realize I'm 17, and I committed to Notre Dame. I told Era it wasn't a big deal back then. He just made the phone call and said, "Coach, I'm coming." And there was no ESPN or any of the 5 stars, 4 stars, whatever. But then I said, "Oh no, now I got to call Coach Daugherty." Oh man, I'm just dreading this phone call. So I got him on the phone and I told him what I was going to do. And for the next 20 minutes, he said that I made a great decision. Era is a great football coach, and he went on and on what a great school Notre Dame was, what a great coach Era was. And he said, "We're going to try to beat you now. Don't worry about that. We're going to face each other head up. We're going to try to beat you." But he could not have made such a tough decision so easy for a 17-year-old kid. I have the utmost respect for that.
Well, you won the national title in 1966, going 9-0-1. You were the starting quarterback. What is your favorite memory about that season? Just for yourself personally, what it was like to be at Notre Dame, Terry, to win a national title with one of the most storied, you know, sports programs in the world. What was that whole experience like?
You know, it was really, Kevin. You know, Jimmy Seymour and I were the only real question marks on that team, because we had a veteran offensive line, a veteran defense, a veteran running back, everything. But all we had was, everybody said, "Well, what can this quarterback and receiver do under pressure?" So Arapur really kept us in a shell for a better part of the season and just sort of let us do our thing and made, you know, he didn't try to ease you into a game. I mean, we came out firing the football against Purdue in our first game of the year. And so, you know, Arrow just had the utmost of confidence in that. And that's the whole thing. If a quarterback can feel that a coach has the confidence, that pretty much makes your game for you right there.
Now, you had a lot of individual success at Notre Dame, again, including finishing third in the Heisman vote in 1968. O.J. Simpson won the Heisman that year, by the way. But what was your most memorable aspect of your career, be it the personal success, the team success, some of both? Or what do you really enjoy, your biggest takeaway from Notre Dame?
It's always the team success, because if you didn't have the team success, you're not going to have the personal success. So it starts with that. I mean, I had a great offensive line, running back. Defense got me the ball. You know, you got to figure, in my sophomore year when we won the national championship, we averaged about 35 points a game, and our defense gave up 2.5 points a game. And if you take out the blocked punt we had for a touchdown, that 2.5 even comes down further. So when you're starting at midfield and, you know, you can sort of relax because you know the defense is going to keep you in the game until you get started or whatever. It's a team effort. I mean, there's no greater sport in the world as far as building a team than football, because if everybody, all 11, have to do the right thing for it to be successful. You know, I played a lot of baseball as a batter against the pitcher. I played a lot of basketball, you know, sometimes a lot of one-on-one. And I ran track, and that was a definite individual sport. And so, but football is the ultimate team sport.
What was it like to be at Notre Dame at that time? I mean, again, clearly Notre Dame, the football tradition, incredible for decades and decades and decades, and still is. What was it like to be there with Arrow Parseghian in the 60s and to be a football player on the campus at Notre Dame?
Well, the academics weren't any fun. I mean, you had to go to class. You had to do your work. And I talked to a lot of friends who were different schools, man. They were skating, and I'm going, whoa, I got 8 o'clock classes. You know, back then when you're in your teens, 8 o'clock's like 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, trying to get up at 8 o'clock. But Arrow made sure he had a system where he sent out a flyer to all the professors at Notre Dame that had his football players in the class. And back then you were allowed 3 cuts per class, you know, missed 3 classes. And you won't get penalized. Under error, you got 0 cuts. So he said, if this player ever cuts, call me. I got the call one time, and that's all you want. I missed the class, and I got a call about 15 minutes later, and he started yelling. He said, get down to my office, yelling and screaming. He said, there's 15 minutes of that class. Get your ass up there. and he made sure. You know, Arrow had a 98 or 99% graduation from the 4 years I was there. And it remained the same. I think his whole career is high 90s. But he made sure that everybody got their degree, because he put the hammer down.
After your stellar college career, you go into the NFL draft in 1969. You were picked 30th overall in the second round by the Steelers. And I'll get to your thoughts on being picked by your hometown team in a second. But what was your thought going into the draft? What was that whole feeling like? Had you had communication with Chuck Knoll or folks from the Steelers?
Well, the Steelers brought me in to check. You got to realize back then the draft was in January. So your season's, you know, everybody's season's over in December sometime. And I had just had my knee operated on. And I got, you know, I missed the last 3 games of my senior year. So I was, when the draft came, I was just getting out of my cast. So I had not, you know, had the time yet to rehab it. So the Steelers, you know, brought me in and checked it out, and everything checked out well. And I think a lot of teams, you know, back then they didn't have a lot of money. You weren't flying around everybody and everybody having to check, you know, their personal doctor check your leg. So I think that injury probably slipped me to the second round, but it was I could not have been drafted by a better organization. You know, I tell people that I was so fortunate in my football career. You know, I had a great career. Thank my parents in Butler. I grew up there in a great time, and Art Bernardi, the coach there. And then, you know, the best decision I ever made was to go to Notre Dame. Then getting drafted by the Steelers. And I liken Arrow Parseghian a lot with Art Rooney, because you can ask 100 people, and normally you would get a 50-50 split whether people like the person or not. But both of those guys would get 100% on the like calendar. Art Rooney was a great person to work for. The Rooney family, great people to be with and you know, to work for. And the same, you know, I compare them a lot to Notre Dame. I mean, they're a big family and they think a lot of you and think about your successes. And so I was very fortunate to have Notre Dame and the Steelers in my football career.
Was it a dream come true? What's it like for you and your family, your parents? You're from Butler. You're 40, 45 miles away from Pittsburgh. Did you grow up a Steelers fan? And to get the call from them to get drafted by the Steelers, your hometown team, just how wild was that for you at that time in your life?
It was great, John. I got the call from Chuck Noll. I was in my dorm at Notre Dame, you know, waiting for a phone call from somewhere. And, you know, when they picked Joe Green, and I knew Joe and I got to be good friends because we traveled around on the All-American tour for college. So Joe has always been a friend of mine since, you know, basically in college. And when they picked Joe, it did not surprise me at all. I know Pittsburgh was up in arms that they didn't go for a quarterback or me, whatever. But I said, man, they got themselves a hell of a defensive player. But Joe was great, and he turned out to be even better. And then to get picked on the second round, you know, there were teams who inquired through our sports information director at Notre Dame, you know, about me, blah, 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 blah. And then I think they think when the Steelers passed on a quarterback, because, you know, Steelers needed a quarterback at the time, there must be something wrong with that knee because they brought him in. So who knows? You never know. It was a crazy game back then. But everything turned out perfectly. I mean, it could not have been better with a better organization.
Terry, you played 8 games. You started 5 in 1969. You were still starting quarterback in 1970, but they brought in somebody else. And I'd like to hear your thoughts about Terry Bradshaw. What was it like? You were both young. You were in your second year. They bring in another quarterback, a number one overall guy in Terry Bradshaw. What was that like for you? Were you upset or angry that they brought in another quarterback? Were you just in it for the team and you were going to help Terry do whatever he needed to take over? What was that feeling like for you?
Well, it's all competition. You know, when I went to Notre Dame, back then, every team had 35 scholarships. Notre Dame brought in 4 All-State quarterbacks in my class. Me from Pennsylvania, Coley O'Brien from Maryland, Bob Belden from Ohio, and Mike Franger from Indiana. So it was just, okay, we got to compete. Well, you know, what the hell's the difference? And, you know, life is one big competition. It's something that you're going to have to do. You can't avoid it. And I'll never forget, I got the call from Chuck. I was in basic training in the Army in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. How bad is that? I was in National Guard. And when the season was over with my rookie year, which I got the hell kicked out of me, that's second story. But at that time, then I had to go into the National Guard for my 6 months basic training.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the draft happened, you know, I was in there, and then Chuck called me, and I never forget, I got called to the phone booth where there was a call for me, and it was Chuck, and he was, you know, there's no reflection on how you played. We thought you played really well, and, you know, it's going to be competitive. I said, fine, you know, I have no problem with competition. And I was more concerned about getting up at 4 o'clock for the guard duty the next day.
What was it like early on with Terry Bradshaw and that competition? You were still the starter. He eventually, of course, took over that role. But how do you feel that you did from a competitive standpoint in doing everything you could to try to keep and hold on to that job?
Well, again, you know, you try to do the best you can, no matter what, you know, practice, whatever, in the games. And it was probably not the best situation for the Steelers. And I'm glad that I was there, but I think early on, you don't draft someone in the second round then the next year you draft someone in the first pick of the draft. You know, quarterback especially, because the quarterback can't help you on special teams or anything else. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to play quarterback, and that's it. And so that they probably should have made a move earlier. I'm glad they didn't. But that probably would have been the best, because you had two young quarterbacks. I mean, I was a veteran quarterback in my second year, you know, because I had all that great experience for, you know, 1 year under my belt. You know, so it, luckily, you know, the offense was easy for me. You know, I absorbed it very well, and so I could help Terry a lot. You know, I helped a lot when I was on the sideline and he was coming out in the game or whatever. And we had a good relationship. You know, we were roommates for a while, and I know he spent a couple Thanksgivings with my family and I in Pittsburgh, and you know, wrestling with my dogs and playing with the kids. And, you know, we had a good relationship. There's no problem whatsoever.
For your career, you won a couple Super Bowls. You were on the team. You were the backup quarterback. You finished a couple of the Super Bowls. You're on the field. What was it like being the backup to Terry Bradshaw and the organization is having success versus if you might have been somewhere else and you would have maybe still had an opportunity to start? How did you balance those two things as someone 24, 25 years old?
Well, first of all, you, there's nothing you could do about it. You know, back then, there was no free agency. You know, you could not go to camp and go to Canada, but that was about the only option you had. And so you just sort of had to absorb everything and just play for the best. If they're going to trade me, they're going to trade me. If not, you know, we'll see what happens. But then it gets to a point where, again, you know, you never made a lot of money playing football. Nobody did back then. So you had to really start thinking about your second career. And, you know, I got a lot of injuries. You know, I had the knee operation in college. I've had a broken ankle in high school. And, you know, those things start to wear on you. And, you know, I had a lot of the hamstring tears and broken fingers and whatnot and broken ribs and, you know, broken nose, everything. And football, when it comes to a peak where it's great, then it's not so good anymore. You know, let someone else do it. And after my eighth year, my last year at Tampa, I said, I've had enough. I got to move on. I mean, I'm not one of these guys that's going to stick around for the last snap in this business. And I love the game. I love playing the game. But there's a time where you just have to say, you know, enough's enough.
You did get opportunities in the postseason. And again, those teams won Super Bowls. What's your favorite memory of all of that from the 70s with the Steelers?
The thing that really sticks out in my mind is after the first Super Bowl, when we're in the locker room, everybody's going crazy, and Pete Rozelle's up there on the platform, and Chuck Knoll and Terry may have been up there, and Mr. Rooney was up there. And just to see the proud look on that old Irishman, it was just a sight for everybody's eyes. He was, you know, he went through 40 years of not winning. Come on, you know. Excuse me. So he finally got one. And just the look on his face was just wonderful to see. Really was.
In talking to some former Steelers, the sentiment seems to be that as the 70s went on, everybody knew how good and how special that team could be. What did you see as the decade was going on and the immaculate reception and everything, and then having the playoff success and winning Super Bowl. What is your recollection of feeling about being in a group of great players and in an organization that was really doing some great, great things?
Well, you could tell right there. First of all, there's nobody on our defense back then who could play today because they'd be out of the game in the first quarter. Because those guys they hit you, and they hit you hard. Unlike you see a lot of the hits today. I mean, when you get a guy like Mel Blount, who's 6'4", 218, runs a 4.440, and just take your head off. And Glenn Edwards, and forget about, you know, Joe Greens and the L.C. Greenwoods and the Ernie Holmes and Dwight White and Lambert. We had some really nasty football players, the great people. And it's such a different game from from back then to today. It's almost difficult to watch.
Sure.
You know, a quarterback, you know, if Terry Wright ever turned upfield, he turned upfield a lot more than I did. And you slid, you got about three helmets in your back, and it wasn't a penalty. You know, nowadays, if you just start your slide, you can't get touched. If the quarterback, you know, they can't hit you in the knees if you're trying to, they're trying to sack you. A quarterback, and everybody says, "Do you believe Tom Brady's playing this long?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "No one touches you. You can play until you're 100." And he doesn't get touched. I mean, they protect the league really protects him.
As a kid from Butler, Terry, growing up and accomplishing everything you did, how proud are you looking back over everything from high school to college to the pros? What is how proud are you of the things you accomplished in your sports career?
Well, everything went well, you know, and I'm not so much that I could say I'm so proud of this, that, and this, and that. I'm proud that I was on a great team, and we all did really well together. That's the whole game right there.
And as I mentioned earlier, Chuck Knoll was famous for saying, you know, get on with your life's work. You spent 35 years on Wall Street. What was that whole experience like?
I was as crazy as football. I was a trader. I traded stocks. And you're trading millions of dollars of stocks per hour, and you know, trying to get good prices here, good prices there, and you know, the market opens at 9:30 and close at 4, and you are just going a mile a minute, just basically the whole time. So it's wild. It was fun. It was a great football was a great training program for it because I was to the point where I knew I made decisions in the 3 second period to throw the ball or not. And when you have an interception, you got to come back and forget about the interception. You don't. Not all your trades are great. So when you don't have a good one, you got to forget about it. Come back, do it again. Where some people don't have that in their DNA. But it was both careers were very gratifying.
Which was more pressure, playing quarterback in the NFL or trading stocks?
Wow, that's a hell of a question, because when you could be on the verge of losing a lot of money, or you could be on the verge of losing a game for a whole city. That's a hell of a question. Probably a toss-up. Ask people in Pittsburgh, they want to win for the Steelers.
I am...
Believe me, if that football didn't happen, I probably wouldn't have never ended up on Wall Street. You know, because they all had you had the name and they wanted to hire a name, and you know, it worked from there.
All right, I've got two more for you, and these are kind of outside the box. One is about your son playing at Notre Dame in the current state of college football, but the first one I have is, and hey, I'm putting you on the spot. If you don't want to answer, that's okay. What do you think of Bitcoin?
I have no idea what it is, and that scares the hell out of me, and I wouldn't touch it.
Does anybody have any idea what it is, Terry? I mean, even the people who have money in it, do they know what it is?
I don't think they do. And I just saw an article today of all these athletes who lost a fortune.
Yep.
In Bitcoins, you know, that Trevor Lawrence, he lost like $37 million, someone said. And, you know, you got that money, guy. Just put it away. Put it in the bank and you got a hell of a good life. Like I said earlier, they're making generational money. You know, I had a conversation with Art Rooney, you know, the president of the Steelers now. Artie was a ball boy when I was with the Steelers. And we're talking on the phone. This is a few months ago. And I said, "All right," I said, "what would your grandfather say if he knew how much money you were spending on players right now?" And he started laughing like hell. And it's true. I mean, sports are absolutely out of control. I know they said it when, you know, the people who played in the 40s and 50s said it about me, about our generation. But we made good money for the year back then. They're making good money for the generation. And it's, you know, keep your money in the bank, man. Don't even think about anything as crazy as Bitcoin.
And your son played at Notre Dame, correct? What was his experience like there?
Yes, he was a really good offensive lineman. He was 6'5", 310. I mean, he's a big, I was the biggest hand ready ever.
That's a big dude. That's a big dude.
Yeah, he blew by me in a heartbeat. But he was really good. He couldn't play his fifth year because he had a lot of concussions. But he got a one-year MBA, and now he's working on investment banking in Wall Street.
There you go.
Been here about 5 years and doing really well, making a lot of money. And luckily, they work him so hard, he doesn't have time to spend it. So that's good.
So he's following in Dad's footsteps, both on and off the field. I do want to ask you about NIL, because you had a son who played college football recently. College football has changed so dramatically with the transfer portal and NIL. Where do you think college football is right now, and where do you think it's going?
First of all, I want the NIL from when I played.
Yeah, right.
I would have made a lot of money, but I am so against it. There are arguments that coaches move from here to here, players should be able to move. Well, coaches have been coaching for 10, 15 years before they get to the point where they can make a move. Here you get a high school kid coming out of high school, going to his first job in college, and now he's going to make a move the next year. You got to show some stability to your university. And what do you do when you got this quarterback who's making all the money, and you got these offensive linemen who are not getting anything? How do you spread that around? And the offensive guy says, maybe we should give this guy a heads up here. It's no way to build a team or camaraderie. I mean, just ridiculous. It's going to get to the point where the schools are going to have to pay that offensive lineman to keep him there. And what the schools are going to say, okay, we're going to pay him, but that takes away his academic part of his scholarship. We can't afford to pay for his schooling and the money. And these kids right now, it's 0.5%, or less than that, that go from high school to the pros. And these guys are going to risk that money for a few grand. What are they going to do? They're going to blow the money, number one. I would have. If you were to give me 20 grand when I was at Notre Dame, man, that would have been gone in the weekend. And then what you have nothing. Guaranteed. What I've said about college athletics, what they should do is, okay, Joe Blow, if you want to leave, you have a scholarship here for life. You can come back to this. If you're 50 years old and realize you made a mistake, you come back to this, Notre Dame will say, you come back to Notre Dame and you will have a scholarship free. But that's the only commitment that they should make to the, but that right now, especially nowadays, I mean, these scholarships are worth, after tax, at least $500,000-$600,000.
Yeah.
Crazy what they're worth now.
Very well said.
I'm so against the NIL. Well, players should get paid this and that. You can make a little compensation here or there, but don't make it a bidding war. I heard just a kid from Pitt who just went to Southern Cal for $3 million.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if he gets hurt? I mean, it could easily happen. And I don't like where it's going. I really don't. Because this is a collegiate game, and the pros are a different game. I don't want the college to turn into a semi-pro team. And that's the direction they're going right now.
All right. That's very, very well said. From Butler to Notre Dame to the Steelers to Wall Street to the medical field, quite a life, Terry. And I can't thank you enough for sharing all of those fascinating, fascinating elements. Just really great memories. And I can't thank you enough.
Okay, Corey, you take care now.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right, then.